From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. A little bit smoky out there, but not too bad. And prayers, of course, for all of our colleagues and fellow Californians in Sonoma County and Napa County and up in Shasta County as well, where they're hit again with fires, and in Butte County as well. Well, we are pleased and honored to welcome in Bishop Jaime Soto. Bishop, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Bob, and it's good to be able to join you in these uncertain times. I was reading the beginning of the book of Job, which happened to have been the reading for Monday,
right?
And so the beginning of the book of Job begins with one calamity after another that befalls Job, and I said, you know, I think I know what this is like.
Yeah, I was going to say, on that happy note, yeah, it is, I've heard a few times people saying, when are the locusts going to show up, you know?
Yeah, it's 2020 has been an extraordinary time and one that's, confounding us and in many ways. But also, I think, heard and experienced is that it also becomes occasions of grace. And so as we go through the many challenges that we have, hopefully we can also not close ourselves in, but keep ourselves open to whatever God wants to teach us and what he wants to, and how he wants to nourish us in these days.
Yeah, indeed. I know my wife and I are telling our kids, despair is not in the good book. It's not. It's all about hope.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And, in that sense, particularly when you look at the book of Revelation, which is filled with calamities, and
right.
yet in the end, the book of Revelations, referred to sometimes as the book of Apocalypse, is a book of hope.
Absolutely.
And that sets the tone for us, particularly as people of faith, as we try to see our ways through a pandemic, just an absolutely devastating fire season,
right.
and all the social turbulence that continues to swirl about us.
Yeah, indeed. Bishop, before we launch into the discussion of Respect Life Month coming up right around the corner, we can't go without mentioning the terrible fire that took one of our mission churches up in Happy Camp, All Souls Mission. I know you went up there.
Yeah.
A wonderful, it's a very small community tucked away in the woods, really, but what wonderful people there. And I know that you going up there to celebrate Mass at Fort Jones, which is the parish, and the All Saints being the mission in Happy Camp, that meant an awful lot to the people up there.
Well, in times like this, that it meant an awful lot for me to be able to go up and to be with the folks and to grieve with many of them, and at least the people that I met, thanks be to God, none of them had lost their homes.
Mm-hmm.
But still, they had lost their church, and they were heartbroken. But also, it was clear to me the resolve and their resolve to place their trust in God and to know that the Lord Jesus would be their good shepherd and see them through. So that it was encouraging. I mean, I went up there to encourage them, and they encouraged me with their very strong faith and determination to continue.
Yeah, a lot of good people in one little town, and So frequently, those little mission churches are they're kind of a community construction project. They put together a small church, and that was a beautiful little church, but right there in the forest.
Actually, bring up bad memories, but I unfortunately this is the second time the church has burned down.
Yes,
and so I think the last time was probably back in the 80s or something, if I recall.
And I believe a church nearby in Weaverville burned down in that area.
Oh, you mean Hayford, maybe?
Or maybe Hayfork, yeah. I think it was Weaverville was the parish, and maybe Hayfork was the mission, yeah.
And you could be right about that, because I've been to Hayfork, and it was a relatively newer building that I can recall.
Yeah.
St. Patrick's in Weaverville.
St. Patrick's in Weaverville, right.
Which I was at maybe about a month and a half ago, and visiting Father Percy up there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a charming little church there, which has also its own cemetery.
Right.
And I think that one of the priests or one of the pastors, I can't remember his name now, but who served in St. Patrick's in Weaverville, requested that he be buried there.
Right.
He's also buried there.
Right. And, boy, you look at that cemetery there, you'll see families going back generations.
Yeah.
Just a charming little town. That's a tough drive, Bishop. You get on 299, there's a lot of curves on that road before you get to...
You know, it's a beautiful drive, and I'll confess to you and our listeners that usually for those long drives, I get somebody else to drive.
Mm-hmm.
That way I don't get as I'm not as fatigued when I get to these places, and on that particular trip, actually, I was able to take one of our seminarians. So
very good.
It gives them an opportunity to see those parts of California and our diocese that we don't often go to.
Exactly, and of course we're not very many far removed from losing that beautiful church in Weed, and I guess some damage in Paradise, not to the church itself, but
thanks be to God, the church survived, but we did lose the rectory and the hall, I was sometime over the summer. I was there in Paradise,
mm-hmm.
The community's going strong there. They must have, on average, between 80 and 100 people or more that still come for Sunday Mass.
Wow!
And Father Martin goes up there every Sunday and celebrates Mass for them. So
I talked to one of the parish a layperson, not a parish administrator, but I forget what his title was, but he kind of oversees everything there.
Yeah, Greg Kidder. Yeah,
yes, Greg Kidder.
Great guy.
I interviewed him, and oh man, he made me want to move up there. You know, it's just like, what a great community they have.
Yeah, it's they're doing good things, and they're anxious to kind of rebuild the rectory and the hall. And I says, well, let's work on rebuilding the community. And that's where they're giving their energy right now. And I'm admiration for their good work up there.
I was reading last night about the former mayor, a woman was currently evacuating the home that she had just rebuilt of the newest fire. So, well, and on a better parish note, Holy Rosary Parish in Woodland is celebrating its 150th anniversary.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And, yeah. I don't. Go ahead.
Well, I was there. We're hopeful to build a new church there someday.
Right.
The community there. I mean, Woodland itself is growing, and that is a good sign. But it also means that the church they have, which is I don't know how old the actual church.
I think that one was 1949. Was built then.
But that has kind of outlived its use, and the parish needs a new church.
And they have a lot of room over where the school is.
Right. They have the land there for the new church, and so hopefully we'll get around to doing that. But it's I was there recently. Last couple of years, and the school there also has a long history.
Oh yes.
And I saw some old photos of the school. And I think at that time it was probably called an academy.
Yeah, it was Holy Rosary Academy.
Holy Rosary Academy, and it really has a long history. And I was there for this pre COVID 19, mm-hmm. So I was there for some dinner celebration and met folks who had gone to the academy and remember what the school was like.
Well, there's a very famous graduate of Holy Rosary Academy.
I can't recall his name, but
Charles Schwab.
That's right, Charles Schwab.
Yeah. Ask Chuck. And he's been apparently a very generous benefactor down the road. So that's wonderful. Yeah, and I don't know if you've ever been to the Yolo County Fair, but Holy Rosary tacos are world famous. They put all the fair food in one area, and then they give Holy Rosary this huge, it's about as big as a football field, because the lines are so long. And one year they served 40,000 tacos at the county fair, and it's only a 5-day fair.
Yeah. And what portion of that did your family eat?
We got about 20,000 of them. I remember we were there with Aunt Mary and Auntie Joe and some other kids, and there were about 12 of us, and I went up and I think I bought 36 tacos, and I come back and I hadn't even sit down to eat yet, and they're all gone, and my wife's looking at me like, why'd you only buy 36 tacos? And they're just like $2 a piece, all volunteer. Father Molina's back there working in the kitchen, and it's everybody in the county knows about Holy Rosary tacos. It's very, very famous. Well, Bishop, we're with Bishop Soto, and we're just a couple of days now from October, Respect Life Month. So important. It seems like it gets more important every year.
Yeah, this is annual time every year that as a Catholic community we remind ourselves of the importance of this great legacy, this wonderful Catholic legacy that we have of the gospel of life, and that's important this year in part because we're also celebrating the 25th anniversary of Evangelium Vitae, mm-hmm. Beautiful document published by St. Pope John Paul II that really brought together in a very concise way the tradition on the Church's teaching on human dignity, mm-hmm. and the importance of working against the evils that undermine human dignity, particularly the sin of abortion and the evils of the death penalty and euthanasia, and as well as the other social evils that undermine human dignity, like racism and poverty and all those those evils that can diminish human dignity. But, particularly with regards to the teaching on abortion, to rob innocent life of the opportunity to share in the fullness of life and to share life with us is a great sin. And with holding up the gospel of life, it's important for us to renew our commitment to and never to tire of the good work of working to end the practice of abortion and to offer women the hope and the beauty of bringing new life into the world, and that's something that as a Catholic community we've been exemplary in that work, and it's hard work, but it's also good work, and I'm proud of all the many things that here in the Diocese of Sacramento that we do in that regard. Sacramento Life Center, the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home, the Mother Teresa Maternity Home, mm-hmm. and one effort that's really just been gaining a lot of traction in our diocese is, in many parishes in the diocese, is the Gabriel Project,
yes.
Which is a whole program where parishioners can in a very personal a concrete way be companions of those women who are struggling or uncertain or afraid, and to give them that word of encouragement, that support, and also to help them with resources when that's needed, so that they don't they don't feel alone, but that they know that they are part of a human family, a community, and that the child that they are carrying can also be part of that same community and same family of life.
Yeah, you know, Bishop, the one word that keeps coming up in all these discussions is accompaniment. Being with them, not judging them, helping them, walking with moms in need. Another command, if you will, program, and I would command people to read the bishop's statement at scd.org on preparing for Respect Life Month. You note that. The sin of abortion commands our attention, but to focus on the sinful act of abortion alone misses the opportunity to change the hearts and minds of women and men who find themselves compelled or even coerced to cross the threshold of an abortion center. It is narrow-minded to think that the lack of health care access, mass incarceration, and underperforming schools are not aligned with the throwaway culture of abortion. Creating communities of hope opens life-giving alternatives away from the desperation or despair of abortion. So many of these things are connected.
Oh yeah, yeah, and which is why for us as a Catholic community, it's important for us to always connect our teaching on the gospel of life with also the works of mercy that we do, and that it is. How we live out the gospel of life with integrity.
And we have so many things happening in October. The 40 Days for Life has just started up. The Memorial Mass for children who have died before birth, which will take place at St. Mary's Cemetery on October 13th at 8 a.m. And then the Memorial Mass for all those who have died of COVID-19, also at St. Mary's Cemetery on Friday, October the 9th at 5 p.m.
I know that both of those masses, one of the reasons we're using the St. Mary's Cemetery, the chapel there, is because we're also able to live stream. So those masses will be live streamed out.
Wonderful.
So the pandemic, there's a certain limits as to
right.
how many people we can have there. But both of those masses, The Memorial Mass for children who died before birth on October the 13th at 8 o'clock, and then also the Memorial Mass for all those who have died of COVID-19 on Friday, October 9th at 5 p.m., the those will be live streamed. So I want to encourage folks to.
Very good. And, of course, the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home, they weren't able to have their annual dinner in September, which you always attend.
Yeah.
And but they did have a virtual auction and hopefully did very well. And, of course, they just lost their longtime president, Mark Splinter. What a wonderful presence and what a wonderful inspiration he was to the pro-life movement.
Oh, well, he just was a dynamo with it brought such vitality to the work of the maternity home. And I'll say there were a lot of people who were involved with that, but the fact that the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home was able to find a new home and one that will help the program to be able to expand, you know, is in large measure due to kind of Mark's determination to make that happen.
Yeah, Mark was he had that booming voice and booming presence, and a lot like his predecessor Richard White, who also had a booming voice.
Oh yeah.
So that they were, and they were good arm twisters too. If you came to that dinner, you really wanted to participate. You really wanted to give.
Yeah. You know, I just want to circle back to the 40 Days for Life,
right.
and again, just to encourage folks to. You know, I think many people, try to imagine what this is like to pray out in front of an abortion center, and it just seems like that. You know, that it seems kind of intimidating.
Yeah.
But I just would encourage people to consider doing it at least once, and it doesn't. And give whatever time you can to it, whether it's, an hour or a couple of hours, or even if it's just a matter of going out there and praying the rosary, and for as long as that takes. I assure people that if you do that, that. You will experience God's grace in providing that very humble and seemingly powerless testimony of faith that you can be a powerful sign of hope, and doing that that demonstration of faith. You are sowing seeds, and you don't know where those seeds will land, but they can change minds and change hearts and change lives.
Yeah, you know, they are, whenever we have them on the program, Susan Money running the Sacramento one, but there are, you can go to 40 Days for Life website. There are other areas in the diocese that also have a 40 Days for Life program.
I will say the one in Fairfield is quite an operation.
It is, yes. And but they talk about having saves every now and then. They get where they know the person came out and said, "I changed my mind." But I think that probably the actual number is about 100 times that, because there are, I'm sure, people that drive by and they just seeing the rosary, that would be enough to stop me in my tracks.
Yeah.
I can tell you,
it's a form of Christian witness.
Yep.
That you're sowing seeds just by being there.
Yep.
And you have no idea where the sower is letting those seeds fall.
Yep.
And it's really an act of trust, but that it does yield. We've heard testimonies and people who come back later and just because they saw somebody there praying can change a mind and a heart.
Indeed. And, of course, as you say, the Gabriel Project, Mike Ronco, who putting miles on his car, driving around the diocese. Anybody who has a question about the Gabriel Project, get a hold of Mike Ronco at St. Clair. And it's that accompaniment. I mean, he told me that every mom that needs it, they guarantee they will provide a brand new car seat for the baby. Which that's a real expense and a real commitment, but they will do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can't bring a baby home from the hospital without the, you know, the legal car seat anymore. So it's just little things like that. They might seem little, but they grow. And of course, the St. Patrick maternity, the Mother Teresa maternity home up in Placerville, they don't get quite the, you know, they're not in the big urban area, but they do tremendous work up there too.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's extraordinary up there. And again, you know, that it becomes a haven that offers an opportunity that can, you know, turn a heart, you know, away from that sense of despair to discovering, you know, a hope, a window of hope, and that can make a difference.
And the Sacramento Life Center will have their virtual gala on November the 7th, Saturday, November the 7th. That's always a big event. This one, again, will be virtual. Bishop, if you would just take a minute to explain the diocesan four-part plan for life.
Well, you know, the we've already touched on quite a bit of it.
We really have.
Well, one of it is obviously the pastoral care,
right?
You know, exemplified by you know, the Sacramento Life Center, or by the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home, by the Gabriel Project. But another part of it is obviously is the importance of prayer and mm-hmm. And again, to say, you know, the 40 days for life is a prayer ministry. It's a form of public prayer that can, again, really yield powerful fruits. But it's allowing God's grace to work through you in a very humble but yet powerful and mysterious way in the lives of others. And then, you know, we also have you know, the work that we do with the annual celebration, or not celebration, but the annual commemoration of the anniversary of Roe v. Wade in
right.
January.
Right.
And we're also, again, Respect Life Month. We want to encourage prayer for the dignity of life and for an end to abortion during this month of October. And then we also want to be able to, continue our work of political advocacy against in the state of California, which is challenging environment to be able to advocate for the gospel of life. But it's important as the Catholic community, we're one of the few consistent, strong voices that bring not just just the gospel, but really what is common sense and serves the common good. And again, it's a good work that needs to continue. And despite all that tries to stifle us in that area, and then lastly is that we need to continue to teach the gospel of life and preach the gospel of life, and that's important for us to do in our churches, but it's also an important element that needs to be part of our Catholic schools and religious education. One of the areas, and we've done some good work on this this past year, and but it's work that we need to continue, is to educate parents on their rights and responsibility to oversee the education, particularly the sexual education,
mm-hmm.
sex education that the children receive in public schools,
right.
And that you know, as the sex education programs in public schools becomes more ideologically driven, that there's a great deal of concern about what is actually being taught to children, and and how they understand their sexuality will make all the difference in terms of them being able to understand and appreciate what the gospel of life is all about. And so I want to encourage parents to become more alert and attentive to that in terms of what their children are receiving in public schools, and to understand that they have the right to say that to have their children opt out of that of that curriculum. They can say, "My children will not receive this." And for us, for our parishes, our religious education programs, particularly, to become offer that the resources for parents and for catechists to offer an alternative curriculum where the children will see. Receive age-appropriate sex education that helps them understand who they are as children of God, and to have that great reverence and respect for the bodies that God has given them.
Bishop, we only have a couple of minutes left, but schools are reopening, and hopefully
well, actually,
our churches.
You know, well, I'll say today we got word that Sacramento County and Yolo County have moved from widespread to substantial, but
right.
It does mean that that the masses will be able to go back inside the churches. And I will say that at least as long as the good weather continues, that in some parishes, it still may behoove them to keep Mass outside because they can have larger numbers of people. But I'm going to leave that to the pastor's discretion. But it is good news that that has happened for Sacramento and for Yolo, which means that there's still there's only four counties, I believe, that are still under where the rates of infection are still too high. And that's Yuba, Sutter, Glenn, and Colusa counties.
Right.
And but things are getting better, and so that's the good news. But what I want to commend our principals and Catholic school teachers, Link Snyder, the director of Catholic schools, and all his team for the heroic efforts that they have made.
Yeah.
To get our schools open, and I believe most, if not all, our schools are open now, and at least for first grade to to sixth grade.
Right.
That that's good news.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, Lincoln and all of his personnel and all his principals and everybody was on board since last March. They've been planning and how are we going to do this and meeting with county health directors and in a real spirit of cooperation and
right.
collaboration, not drawing lines in the sand or anything, and just going through it and saying this is from. I talked to him one day, and he said, "We want to know what the child's doing from 7 in the morning until they go home in the afternoon." And it has been really heroic work, I think.
Yeah, and in trying to provide safe and responsible education to the children, and I think is a blessing for the children, and I know it's a blessing much appreciated by parents.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Bishop Soto, always a pleasure to talk with you. There's so much happening. I'm sure we'll be talking about completely different things the next time you're on, but I appreciate all you do for the diocese, and certainly the prayers of all of us go.
Well, Bob, we do it together, and you and I were talking here on this beautiful feast day of the archangels, Michael, Gabriel, and Raphael, and I think even in all our efforts here and what we do as a church, we also have to remember that we're part of the Great Communion of Saints.
Yes.
And that our work is never, we're never alone. We are always in great company, and with the Lord Jesus as our shepherd, and he will get us through these uncertain times.
That's very comforting. Bishop, thank you so much, and we'll look forward
to
talking to you again soon.
Okay, God bless.
Hey, God bless you too. Thanks so much. That's Bishop Jaime Soto, the Bishop of the Diocese of Sacramento. We'll take a quick break. And yeah, our prayers are with our bishop. Our prayers are what he just said is so important that we're not alone. We're in good company. So trust the Lord, and despair again is not. It's we are a hopeful people. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hello, this is Jennifer Campbell, Director of Trinity Pines Catholic Center. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Jennifer, and thanks for all you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Well, we're pleased and honored to welcome in Rabbi Seth Castleman, who is the head of the Exodus Project. Seth, good day to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Bob, always nice to be here with you.
The High Holy Days for you.
Indeed, indeed. Yesterday was Yom Kippur, and last week was Rosh Hashanah. Yes.
Explain those.
So they're the two sort of biggest holidays in many ways for Jews. The Rosh Hashanah is the Jewish New Year, and Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement, the day of repentance and humility, and but both of them have to do with renewal and returning to God and returning to our own higher selves, repentance, salvation, yes, all those high and holy concepts.
And how are those fixed on the calendar?
So the Jewish calendar is a lunar calendar, and there's a leap year every few years to sort of readjust it. So they usually fall in, I mean, they always fall at the same time in the Jewish calendar, but in the Western calendar, it's usually September into October. Rosh Hashanah is on the new moon in September, and then 10 days later is Yom Kippur.
Wow. I first heard of Yom Kippur when, I was probably in 7th or 8th grade, junior high school, and I was a big baseball fan, and for whatever reason, my hero was Sandy Koufax.
Sure.
And it was interesting because pitchers throw dusters. They sometimes throw right at the guy. And I remember hearing an interview with Sandy Koufax. He said, "I would never do that. I would never hurt somebody to win a baseball game." And it always stuck with me. And then here are the Dodgers. I wasn't particularly a Dodger fan, but I was a Sandy Koufax fan. Here they get in the World Series, and Sandy Koufax says, "I'm not pitching on Yom Kippur. And I'm going, I got to learn about this Yom Kippur.
Well,
I was so struck by that.
It would be the equivalent of a Catholic not pitching on Easter.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I wasn't mad at him. I was like impressed. It was like, this man takes his faith seriously.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So.
And unfortunately, we're all having to practice from afar. So services, just like in the Catholic tradition, the Jewish services are being done remotely.
How has that worked out?
I find it harder. I led some of the family services, and it's definitely not the same sense of connection and community and sanctity. There's something about being in the sanctuary and connecting as a community. And we do what we have to, and it's for the common good.
Well, before anybody thinks they're listening to the Jewish Radio Hour, we should say that we're having Seth on to talk. You are the director of the Exodus Project. Tell us about the Exodus Project for people that may not have heard you before.
Sure. So Exodus Project came out of the wisdom and compassion of Bishop Soto, who had instigated, as many of your listeners probably know, a more robust and extensive chaplaincy and fellowship and efforts inside prisons and jails throughout the diocese. There are some 25,000 to 30,000 people incarcerated in the Sacramento diocese. And over the last number of years, there's been more and more done to work with people inside. And one of the outcomes of that was realizing that when people really need the help, in some ways, is that when they get to the gate on the way out. And so after a few years of planning and now a couple of years of implementation, we have Exodus Project, which is a program of St. Vincent de Paul and supported in large part through the generosity of the diocese and the bishop, as well as many Catholic and non-Catholic donors. It's an interfaith project, but it is sort of rooted in Catholic teachings and it's rooted in the Catholic community that serves through mentoring and also through offering resources, housing, employment, clothes from the St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, bus passes, transportation, and other resources. We try to be a one-stop shop to help people who are getting out of jail and sometimes in prison as they reconnect back into the community, working with them, supporting them both internally on the emotional, the psychological, the spiritual, the religious, and externally in re-engaging in their community.
Is there a model for this?
Well, there are many reentry programs throughout the country, as we have, hundreds of thousands of people returning. Something like 700,000 people return from prison and jail in the country each year. We incarcerate so many. We sort of are creating our own specific model. It is part of a larger St. Vincent de Paul project called Immersion, but we've sort of created our own that works for here in Sacramento, and one of the main pieces is one-on-one and group mentoring. Mm-hmm. So we train, we actually have a cohort of new mentors that are being trained right now. It's a 16 to 18 hour training over a couple weeks, and then after that they'll be paired one-to-one, men with men and women with women, with somebody who's still incarcerated, and they'll work with them and visit with them and support them and connect with them and fellowship with them for some weeks or months or even up to a year while they're still in jail, and then work with them in a similar sort of way for 6 months after they get out.
And primarily at this point, it's people are going to be released from county jails, so not as usually a lesser offense than people that are in state prison.
It is correct that the majority of the people we work with are coming out of the branch, the RCCC, which is down in Elk Grove, the branch county jail. But with realignment of a few years ago, nonviolent offenses of under 3 to 5 years are often served in county jail. So what used to be an offense that you'd go to state prison for
right. Is
now often one. So it's a lot of drug offenses. It's a lot of nonviolent theft of a car. It's DUIs or DUIs with an injury. It's a lot of people with addiction issues, 95% of the people we work with have addiction issues.
Wow. You know, I remember years ago, as part of a class at UC Davis, going down to the prison in Vacaville and doing, it was glorified legal counseling. We weren't legal. We couldn't legally provide legal advice, but, you know, we would look at their cases and look them up and give them resources and things. And as part of that, you know, we would get to see their rap sheet and talk to them and et cetera. And almost without exception, the first offense for, and these, some of these people were lifers. The first offense was a drug offense, usually at a very young age.
Yeah. We have both something like 90-something percent have addiction issues and 90-something percent have significant trauma in their childhood. Those are the two consistent factors.
Are drugs readily available in the prisons to the point where people don't kick the habit while they're in prison?
That's a very good question. It's available more in prison than in jail, is my sense, from having worked some in both. So I think people do kick it a bit more in jail, although it's not as long a time. You know, when I talk to people, one of the first questions I ask when I'm meeting with them is, what's your drug of choice? And, of course, here in Sacramento, still the majority is methamphetamine, much more than opiates. So the people we work with, some of them have been clean for a long time. Some of them have been clean just for the 3 to 6 to 12 to 24 months that they are incarcerated.
And is that indicative that they're going to be able to stay off if they have been clean?
That's the tough transition. And we try to get them into supportive housing, and we're in the process of working with Sacramento Self-Help Housing to try to develop some housing specifically for our mentees, and we're looking for funding for that right now, so that we'd have supportive, sober living environments that people would go to for 90 days, because it's very hard to kick drugs in general and methamphetamines in specific. But when people are really ready to make a change, people are able to also make a change. It's phenomenal, the transformation that people do. It is harder working with the jail population, and that people are more on a rotating cycle of going in and out. And it's often people who have done hard time, have done much longer periods, 5, 10, 15, 20 years or longer, who really have made the transformation. So it's harder work to do with people that are just coming out after 6 months or a year.
Is it your experience that incarceration serves as a deterrent? I understand incarceration is most of the time necessary, but does it serve as a deterrent or not? I mean, or do they, because you see a recidivism rate so high, and it's like either it's not a deterrent, or the circumstances are such that they can't help themselves.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it works much as a deterrent. I would say, you know, there's deterrent, there's punishment, and there's rehabilitation. And I would say all three are failing pretty miserably in our country. And I would agree with you, we need something. But I would say what we have is pretty dysfunctional, and not just for the well-being of the people that are in, but for the well-being of society. You know, 90-something percent of them are coming back.
Yeah.
Very few are in for life without parole. So they're coming back, and we want them to be better people, not more traumatized people, not, you know, more in the depths of criminal thinking and criminal behavior when they return to their community, to our community, to our shared community. So we could and should and hopefully someday will do better.
Yeah, most acts of recidivism have a victim, you know, and beyond the person who's offending, you know, there's going to be a victim. And so we should all be concerned about what's happening within the prison. Seth, how do people find you, find the project?
Sure. So Exodus Project is online in a couple of places, both on the St. Vincent de Paul website and on the Sacramento Diocese website. The easiest place to go is exodus-project.org. That's Exodus and then a dash and then the word project.org, and that will bring you to one of the websites. And my phone number is on there. We're looking for more mentors, men and women. We're looking for employers who might be interested in giving somebody a second chance in employment.
And we're also looking for funding. We're looking for the generosity of your listeners to open up their checkbooks and support us. So the easiest way to find us is exodus-project.org.
Very good. Very good. Well, blessings to you and your family and to all the people you serve, and blessings on the Exodus Project as well. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you, Bob. Always a delight. Blessings to you and your family as well.
Take care. That's Rabbi Seth Kesselman, the head of the Exodus Project out of the Diocese of Sacramento, and a really good man running a real, you know, a difficult but a hopeful program that can actually help people that are incarcerated. And they are looking for mentors. They're looking for people who can help. They're looking for employers who can give people a second chance. Well, Holy Rosary Parish in Woodland, we were talking briefly with Bishop Soto about this as well. Holy Rosary Parish is commemorating 150 years of service in Woodland Sunday, October 4th, 150 years. The story is that in Yolo County, where Woodland is the county seat, there were actually a few Catholic services occurred as early as 1821. Of course, it would be in the area of Yolo County, there was no such thing as Yolo County because California was not a state in 1821. It didn't become a state until 1850. But in the area of Yolo County, in the Woodland area, 1821. But in October 1870, so 150 years ago, right after the Civil War, Holy Rosary Parish dedicated its first church building in Woodland in memory of Our Lady of the Holy Rosary. That building was located on Main Street, for those of you that know Woodland, on Main Street between Elm and Walnut Streets. Main Street's still there. Elm and Walnut are still there. However, due to heavy rains and poor construction, in 1871, the steeple settled and cracked, and the building was declared unsafe. But that was not a happy day, only a year after the church had opened. As a result, in 1874, construction of a new church building at the corner of Main and Walnut was begun. In 1912, the 1874 church building was converted into a parish hall. Construction of a new church building was started at the corner of Main and Walnut. And that church building was dedicated on June the 1st, 1913, and was used by Holy Rosary Parish until 1949. And then the current church building, a beautiful church, located right at the corner of Walnut and Court Streets, has beautiful statues out in front of the Holy Family, really beautiful. And it's just one street off of the main street, which is truly the main street in Woodland. That building was dedicated October 2nd, 1949. So it's been there 71 years. And it's been remained in use since 1949. But as you've heard Bishop Soto say, the hope is to one day build a new church, because Woodland is growing by leaps and bounds, a much bigger city than it was in 1949, and they really need a new church there. But that it's always hard to give up an older and beautiful church like the church they have now. But that day is certainly coming. They do have the land for it. The Holy Rosary Parish opened its first Catholic school in 1886 with a staff of 9 Holy Cross sisters. School became known for its academic excellence. Initially, it was just for girls. Later, boys were added. I'm one of the people who went there for a while, and I'm very proud of that. The Holy Cross Sisters served until 1977. In 1980, the Sisters of the Religious of the Blessed Virgin Mary began their service and stayed there until 1986. And now Holy Rosary School operates with a staff of 13, continues as a beacon of excellent educational opportunity for youth in Woodland, one of three Catholic schools in Yolo County, along with St. James in Davis and Our Lady of Grace in West Sacramento. During its years in Woodland, Holy Rosary Parish has endeavored to be a positive presence in the community, often in conjunction with other religious and nonprofit organizations. Members of Holy Rosary Parish, they're legendary. They've helped to feed and clothe the needy, tutor and provide baked goods to youth in juvenile hall, teach students in Woodland schools, give medical care to Woodland patients, serve the community as public employees, and operate businesses that employ many Woodland residents. You can't imagine what the city of Woodland would be like in the absence of Holy Rosary Parish. It's really remarkable. In addition, Holy Rosary Parish has sold those world-renowned tacos at the Yolo County Fair to raise fund for parish needs. And as I was talking with Bishop Soto a couple of years ago, they sold 40,000 tacos. They spend weeks ahead of time preparing them and put them in the freezer, and then they bring them out at the fair. And all kinds of volunteers. It's a lot of businesses, a lot of restaurants could imitate what they're doing. I mean, it's really a wonderful assembly line, great food, and the whole of Yolo County turns out to have Holy Rosary tacos. Father Jonathan Molina said, "I am so privileged to be pastor of this historic faith community. The commitment and support of our parishioners over the last 150 years has been a continuing tribute to their deep faith." Of course, they're not going to be able to have a big celebration on Sunday, October 4th, this coming Sunday, with the COVID and in recent days, all the smoke as well. They are circling the date of May the 2nd of 2021 and hopefully to have a much bigger participation there. But say a prayer for all the good folks at Holy Rosary Parish celebrating 150 years of ministry in the great city of Woodland. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town, and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.